And we are recording.
So yeah, we were talking about what this episode should look like, what we should try and get into, whether we want to do X's and O's, whether we don't. I think we want to focus on takes and big picture stuff. What do you want to do? What do you want to do today?
I kind of want to come at this a bit recklessly. I want to be reckless with our takes here. We got to kind of balance the scales out, you know what I mean? Like all the hate and slander that we've been getting as Raps fans all year, we got to balance the scales a little bit and be a bit reckless on our sides. You know, we're in the finals now.
So
You know?
I agree with that on principle. My biggest issue is just I'm not sure how reckless I'm feeling right now thinking about this series. We're what, a day now away, 24 hours away from tip off in the NBA Finals. I'm nervous.
Yeah, do you hear yourself? Tip off of the NBA Finals. We're in the NBA Finals. Like my mental state right now is basically like if you asked me like would I rather have like Pascal Siakam or Klay Thompson? Like I would probably take Pascal Siakam to be honest.
Wow.
That's where I'm at right now as a Raptors fan. I feel like I deserve it, honestly. Like we deserve being just foolish right now because we're in the finals.
We
Who can
deserve
question
it.
us right now?
We
We
deserve
deserve
it,
it.
but what happens after game one when Klay Thompson's the reason we lose at home?
I'm not even thinking about
See,
that. I'm not even thinking about
I
that.
can't separate the excitement and the energy from the nervous energy, the mounting nervous energy, and to an extent the fear that I feel going on.
I know. And that's like the Raptors fan in us. Like the Raptors fan deep down in us can't help but like not even just take a moment to enjoy this, right? We're always like, okay, that was great. Forget it. Now we're gonna get trampled in the finals. And I'm trying to be, you know, the new generation of Raptors fans now that are confident, you know, believing in our team, reckless about our takes, you know, just oozing confidence. That's where I'm at right now, and that's what I want to start. This movement of Raptors fans that are just, you know, we're here and we made it. Respect
This
us.
from the guy who talks about the laziness of other people's takes. Now you just want to throw Siakam over Clay to start the show. I'm
You know, sometimes you just gotta you just you know you deserve lazy takes sometimes. You know, I feel like, you know, Boston fans, you know, because they keep fucking winning all the time, they get away with all these ridiculous lazy takes, and now I feel like I deserve it as a Raptors fan being in the NBA Finals. I don't know. That's where I'm at right now. I don't
No,
know.
I like it. I think that we could do the show that way. Oh God, I was gonna say something about this. I guess just shit. I had this really good anecdote prepared, Andrew, and now I can't remember what it was. The whole time I was sitting here listening to you being ridiculous, and I had a perfect response, and I've forgotten what it is
Was it
already.
Kevin Durant related? Where were
Well,
you
I
going with
could. I
it?
mean, it, see, although I think that kind of adds into the recklessness. Like, I don't know if he's even going to play.
I was reading your notes earlier, and you had something interesting about how this could be like real, like biggest NBA finals ever for you in terms of like, you know, validation of your ultimate position in the NBA, your whole Kevin Durant and Raptors
Oh,
fandom. Why don't you
yeah.
talk
Okay,
about that a little
okay.
bit?
Before we get carried away with Raps love and excitement for this series, that's a good place to start, actually, because not only do I have a chance for the Raptors to be the first team of any level, I was going to say professional team, but any team that I've ever cheered for, the first team to break through and get to this point. I mean, of course, I've had teams that I've like kind of rallied myself to get behind so that I could enjoy a playoff run more. I've done that with LeBron teams in the past, his first run with Cleveland. You know, I've certainly enjoyed big games and big moments in these playoffs, but I've never had my own team, a team that I grew up cheering for, a team that like I have followed from the beginning, literally from the beginning. I think I went to an exhibition game in Ottawa. I guess back then it would have been like the Palladium or the Corral Center, maybe. And I watched an exhibition game of the Raptors. So to have that team come all this way now and be on the precipice of not only potentially an NBA championship, but a huge NBA championship against a dynasty. So there's that side of it, but then the other side of it, and this is the little bit more lonely position to have. I am one of those few people who thinks that Golden State Warriors are way more interesting with Kevin Durant. And I haven't really ever held it against Kevin Durant that he joined that team. I think, you know, bad luck losing to a team and then going and joining them to win your first title. But having said that, he's clearly the best player on the team and was likely to win a title at some point anyway. So he just kind of accelerated that process. And I think that's fair, especially after what LeBron had done to get his first title, joining up with Dwayne and Chris Bosh. So I have an opportunity in front of me now where Toronto could win the title, which would be huge. And if Kevin Durant does not play, my views of Kevin Durant being the most important and the best player and just the most exciting thing about Golden State, also validated by them losing without him.
Yeah. I mean, your two core positions as an NBA fan would be unassailable at that point, really, right? So,
well, I would like to think so. Yeah, and also at the same time, it's high stakes. It's a high wire act because the flip side could be true as well.
It could all come crashing down.
Instead of us taking out Golden State, taking out this dynasty and having this incredible moment of celebration as a Raptors fan and as a sports fan in general, and instead of Kevin Durant proving once and for all and silencing the doubters that he is the very best player on Golden State and the most important part of what they've done, and then probably the best player in the league aside from Kawhi, obviously, you know, the Raptors could lose in four to Steph Curry's team. And then not only will this be a devastating end, kind of an anticlimactic finish for this Raptors season, it would also go a long way in making Kevin Durant even lonelier and even more of a kind of punching bag for NBA fans.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, I hope that the former happens and not the latter. Let's just say not so much for your sake, but for my sake. But
yeah.
Yeah, I guess that's a nice bonus for you, having that KD stan in you properly validated.
Yeah, it so would be nice. Cool. It would be nice. So you don't care at all. You don't care at all, but whether KD comes out ahead in this or comes out behind.
No, I don't really care. I'm mostly excited for Kevin Durant to not be on the Warriors anymore, so I can kind of go back to like enjoying watching him.
Well, that's true too.
I genuinely actually loved those OKC teams. I loved them. I loved watching them. They were kind of my team in the West to cheer for. Like that KD Russ combo. Even after James Harden left, I still loved that team.
Well, Ibaka. Ibaka was so good too.
Surge, young Surge was amazing. Yeah.
Yeah. It's really interesting. I don't know if we'll get into all this today, but it's really interesting to think about where the league's at right now. Because there was those years, there was that long run of LeBron James in the East, and that's been up against, obviously, Golden State, but before that, it was up against the Spurs.
Yeah.
Who else? Who else? Were the other big teams they played? I guess they had a series against
Mavs. The Mavs one that they lost, and yeah, back then, the Spurs were the real powerhouse, but OKC was kind of a
OKC,
powerhouse,
right,
too.
Yeah. So I wanted to get to that. Yeah. So it's just interesting that the three kind of big players, in my opinion, going back to the Miami days, have been LeBron James, Kawhi Leonard, and Kevin Durant. And obviously LeBron's out, but he kind of looms as, you know, the recently crowned best player of all time, maybe, or second best player of all time behind Michael. Now he's not there, but he's still, you know, he hasn't had a chance to sort of defend his title.
Yeah.
But in the absence of it, it's clearly KD and Kawhi, and here they are meeting each other.
Yeah. The throne is up for grabs now. And for, I guess, like, people kind of assumed that KD would take it, but Kawhi had really staked his ground, staked his claim for next heir to that throne, I guess. But okay. I wanted
Game
to
of Thrones.
Yeah, to, you know, pull it back to our Game of Thrones conversation from last time. I think our takes were all solid, by the way. If anyone didn't like them, I think we were correct in our Game of Thrones takes. But anyways, I wanted to pull it back to kind of how we started this conversation. So you kind of alluded to, you know, how your early days of becoming a NBA fan and a Raptors fan, watching exhibition games in Ottawa. I'm also from Ottawa originally, but the Raptors being the only Canadian team, I naturally, you know, became at a very young age a Raptors fan. It definitely helped that, you know, I was a big Jurassic Park movie fan. And so when the Raptors kind of were created, naturally, like, this was their intention, is to get all the kids on board by theming their team around this movie. So that's how they got me on board. And I remember watching Vince at a young age. And yeah, and so growing up, I you know, when watching the NBA, I would always cheer for Toronto. And then about 6 years ago now, I think, I moved to Toronto. And I remember the first year I was here actually was kind of the start of this era of Raptors greatness, you know. So it was that first year where kind of they tried to trade Kyle Lowry to the Knicks and that fell through. And then suddenly, you know, they were good and they were a winning team. And I remember watching anxiously that Brooklyn series against the old Cats, Paul Pierce and Kevin Garnett, and just how exciting it was for the city to be in the playoffs. Like, I remember just the energy in the city was electric, even though we were like, you know, we were the upper seed, but we were kind of neck and neck with this Brooklyn team that had all these veterans.
Yeah. Most of the guys on TV, most of the talking heads on ESPN and TNT were taking them.
Yeah, and there was kind of – that was kind of the start, I think, of the Raptors fans' mentality that no one takes us seriously, because even then I remember – and probably it helped our energy and our passion actually is like everyone doubted us even though we were the upper seed. And I remember watching that Game 7, that heartbreaking, you know, Kyle Lowry got blocked to Paul Pierce for the game winner. But I remember like coming out from that, just being so energized, like feeling like we had a real team here. And yeah, ever since then, I've been to a bunch of games. So the first game I had ever been to was, for that season. And it just feels, I don't know. It's like hard to describe. It's like this sense of like, we made it, like we put in the work, you know, year after mm-hmm. year, really like pushing for our team through heartbreak, through thick and thin, through all the doubt that we've faced and we've talked about extensively on this podcast from the media and all just the horrible takes that we had to push through. And that kind of created a bond amongst fans, I feel like, that really almost increased our love for this team. It's kind of like, this is our team and everyone doubts us, but we love our team anyways. And to be here now, you know, making it to the finals, it feels like such a level of validation that I just want to let loose. I just want to give everyone so much shit. I want to be reckless. I want to be just screaming out that the Raptors are the best team in the East, hands down. You know, I have lots of takes with this pod, but I just like, you know, I like looking back and seeing like where we've come from and where we are now and just the things that we've gone through to get here.
Yeah, I think that's important. Whenever people think about Raptors fans, they need to understand that this has been kind of a long time coming. And you can't drive too much of a wedge or make too much of a distinction between these past 5 years and this year just because of Kawhi. The success that we've built up slowly but surely over this last 5-6 years now with guys like Lowry and DeRozan, but more importantly with Masai Ujiri and the coaching staff. That process is why we were able to get Kawhi. I mean, you don't get Kawhi in a trade for DeMar straight up. You got to have a guy like Jakob Poeltl, frankly, who looked like a star on our team coming off the bench, right? Like everything that went in for us to have that bench mob gave us an asset to go out and make that trade. So I think Marc Gasol made like a really nice comment, just like Marc Gasol, to say something like this. He talked about after he won Game 6 that the guys from his good Memphis teams that made a run at the West a few years back, Conley, Zach, and I think Tony Allen as a defensive specialist. He talked about how those guys were with him in the locker room celebrating, you know, in spirit. And I think the same is true. DeMar will probably never make his peace with kind of this trade, but he was, you know, you don't have Kawhi without DeMar, and you don't have Nick Nurse without Dwayne Casey. So there is this continuum, and I think the best place or the most obvious place to see that continuity is in the Raps fans and that celebration that they had after Game 6. Maybe one of my favorite podcasts, not named Raptors Room, of course, is the Open Floor podcast that you introduced me to with, I think, Andrew Sharp and Ben Golver. Those guys had a whole big episode about the Toronto fans and the Toronto team, and they were kind of a little incredulous at the celebration after game six. I think they pushed back a little bit. Like, they were on the one hand kind of happy for Toronto and the Raps fans, but they were also like, geez, you know, they were a little embarrassed on our behalf that we were celebrating so much after a finals berth rather than, say, a finals win. I just think that that misses the experience, yeah, obviously, of being a Raptors, yeah, fan. And this is a celebration that is born of a lot of heartbreak and a lot of soul searching after our favorite players. Maybe DeMar DeRozan's arguably the most popular Raptor player in history, right there with like early Vince Carter, yeah, years. And yeah, it sucked to trade him. Like, that was like a head heart situation. A lot of people reacted negatively at first to that trade before they finally reconciled to the fact that we suddenly had one of the best players in the game on our team. But that's why there was such a show of, yeah, emotion, I think.
Yeah, that's a really great way to put it. I think like the celebration was more than just a celebration that we made it to the finals. It was a celebration of like the past 6 years and everything we've gone through to get to here. It's like you said, it's not just that we have Kawhi. Obviously, Kawhi being here like directly, you know, got us, yes, to the finals for,
yeah,
the majority.
He's the closest, closest cause and effect.
Exactly, but it's more than that. You know, the ability to bring a new guy in this year and a bunch of new players in this year and get them into the fold and create this cohesive environment, like all that is born out of the intangibles and the culture that we've established, yep, here in Toronto. And this team that has allowed it to kind of persist with a winning mentality year after year after year. And I give a lot of that credit, like you, yeah, said, to Masai Ujiri, who I think is really the true MVP of this team, like more valuable than Kawhi to me. He's really, ever since he's come here, he's really changed the whole perception and dynamic of this team with his professionalism, with just his leadership. Leadership. Yeah. That's the best way to put it. You know, he's a true leader.
He's an incredible,
exactly,
leader.
Yeah. And he really set the tone, set the culture. You know, he built a whole system, not just, it wasn't sort of one dimensional focus that a lot of GMs are focused on, just, you know, putting together a team. He put together a whole culture, a staff. He brought together the G League team, the Raptors 905, which has been great for player development, for the organization, and just all these little things that he's done to really put the Toronto Raptors organization as an elite organization up there. I would say, yeah, top three organization in the league easily.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, it feels like it. And we have the proof with being one of two teams standing at this point in the season. I think what Masai did, he's a lot of the best GMs. There's a handful of guys you can kind of single out, and you know they're so good because they put in the work, right? Like, they work kind of around the clock, and they never take days off and trying to build a winner. But I think the difference is that Masai had a unique challenge as trying to put Toronto on the map, trying to put the city more on the map, but also trying to put this organization and this team on the map. And I think, you know, he coupled his vision, incredible, like, unmovable vision. He was very devoted to building this team in a certain way, and he had all kinds of creativity and all kinds of nice off-court touches along the way, and I think you see his leadership kind of shine through with a guy like Kyle Lowry, yeah, right now, where I don't think I've ever felt more confident in a guy stepping up and hitting free throws than when Kyle, yeah, Lowry does late in that series against Milwaukee. And I don't think you could have said that a few years ago. Like, maybe I'm getting him confused a little bit with DeMar, because those two were so attached at the hip. But it seems to me like Kyle has really grown as like a steady, like, he constantly credits Kawhi's like level-headedness, but I think Kyle's got it too, man. He's like a Zen master, yeah, out there. It's funny, like, he's definitely not the best version of Kyle Lowry as like a scorer throughout his career, but I would choose this Kyle Lowry to go into the NBA Finals with over any previous version of Kyle Lowry. Yeah. Like, I just trust him. I just trust him now.
Yeah, he's hit a level of maturity, I think, that we've never seen. And he just had an incredible series. Like, I think like a career defining series against the Bucks. And, you know, with the stakes, yep, so high and the stage so grand, you know, people, the narrative of Lowry being a playoff choker is done. That is done. Yeah. Like, he had a couple, yeah, of bad series throughout his playoff career, but those were mostly early on. So there was the Wizards sweep, and I think he had one that Indiana series the next year. That first round was a bit shaky. But if you look throughout the other series, she's been solid for us consistently. And I think people kind of highlight the few cases where he hasn't looked that great and kind of projected that on the rest of his career, when that's frankly not true. And I think he's really dispelled all that with his performance in that Bucks series, which is just fantastic. Like, he was a stabling force throughout, really, you know, pulling his weight in terms of being the number two option when Pascal, you know, who has a bit less experience, was not really as able to put his stamp on the series. Kyle really stepped up, and it showed. His maturity showed.
Yeah, he reminds me, and I'm not very good with comps, and I'm not the of the two of us, I'm not the stats guy, but what he's doing right now, it reminds me of a guy like Chauncey Billups. I don't know if you remember whenever Detroit broke through and kind of was a surprising champion. It feels very much to me like Kyle Lowry is doing something similar to what Chauncey Billups was able to do later.
Yeah, Chauncey I don't know if he still is, but for a while he mentored actually Kyle Lowry. So you could see Chauncey kind of rubbing off on Kyle there.
Yeah. Is that a comparison that you have been tied in for longer than I have with like the Toronto Raptors coverage? Is that a comparison?
Actually hear that comparison not too often, but it gets brought up every once in a while, the Kyle Chauncey comparison. And I think it's deserved.
And it filters through the whole team. We're doing it. We're going to the finals. We're just going to keep going on this high. You see it with Marc Gasol. Yeah. You see it with Siakam. You see it with Danny Green. Like, everyone, and we haven't even gotten to Kawhi yet. Everyone just seems smart and like mature and like a good teammate. I can't see a hole in this team in terms of like that locker room. There's just nobody who feels like they have to make up sort of a maturity gap with another player on this team. Like, everyone's carrying their weight.
Absolutely. And I think it showed time and again in this series, right? Like, there are so many examples of seeing that just in this Bucks series throughout the playoffs. But if you focus in on this Bucks series, like, to be down 2-0 and to be able to rattle off four straight against a team that hadn't lost more than two straight all season. Especially in game 5 and 6, if you look, like, we went down big in both of those games, you know, down 15 to 18 points. In game 6, we were down 15 in the third quarter. And I remember like watching that game in the first half, just the kind of calls that were going against us that felt, you know, very shaky. And it definitely could have rattled a younger team, a more immature team, and kind of taken them out of the game, the kind of calls that they were getting. Whether deserved or not, they were unfortunate, right? And a lot of them were going against the Raptors. And despite everything that was going wrong, to be able to rally from that just shows the stability and maturity of this team. It's infectious throughout the locker room. And honestly, it gives me so much confidence going into the finals that even though, you know, beyond Kawhi and Danny, our team doesn't have finals experience, I feel like I'm not worried about Pascal on the big stage or Kyle on the big stage or even Mark on the big stage. I mean, obviously Mark, I have the most confidence in, and I think all those guys, I have trust in to not be too afraid of the big stage and big moment. We'll see. Yeah, obviously,
I think they overcame that. I think there was a little bit of that late in that series against Philly. And I think it was just because they were really under pressure at that point. You could not go out in the second round. Yeah. It just couldn't happen. Otherwise, it was going to feel like a failure, which wouldn't have been completely fair from like a team management perspective, because they obviously made a good trade either way. But it would have felt in that locker room like the season had been a failure. So I think there was a moment there where they blinked and they dropped the ball a little bit. But fortunately, we have a savior. We have Kawhi Leonard. Let's talk about Kawhi.
Let's do it.
And like you said, for all the things that went into making this team like a really good team, Kawhi is clearly the key piece and the clearest cause and effect.
The godsend.
Taking a team that was good and maybe even great the last couple seasons. Because I would say 6 years ago, we were a good team. And then maybe 3 years ago, we were a great team. And then obviously now we've become an elite team, a title contender. And that last part, that last leap is very much about Kawhi. So let's put him in perspective a little bit. Is he, you know, Masai said it, he's the best player alive. He plays for Toronto. Is that where you're at with what Kawhi's doing?
That's
right now?
Definitely where I'm at, and I'm definitely not the.
I'm not surprised. I'm not surprised.
I'm not exactly the most unbiased person to talk about this, but I think so. And here's the case, right? I mean, like right now, I think the competition is, I guess you could say, it's three way. It's between Kevin Durant, Steph Curry, and Kawhi. I think is that fair to you?
Yep,
I think okay. LeBron has been taken out of the equation just because if you're not in the playoffs, you're not in the playoffs. If you're not playing, you don't get to make your case.
Right? Yeah. You vacate. You maybe didn't lose the title in a head to head, but you stepped away long enough that you need to take it back.
Spot. Like yeah. LeBron could potentially come back next season and take it back.
I agree,
but he's given it up now.
Okay, I think that's a really good way to frame where LeBron is in this conversation, but I want to push back a little bit about Curry because I think Curry, and maybe we're getting ahead of ourselves, but I think Curry is getting more, he's being overrated right now with what he's doing. I don't think he played a good defensive team in Portland, and he gets a lot of help from other guys. He doesn't seem like that singular dominant force the way Kawhi is, or Kevin Durant for that matter. So I would be a little bit more reluctant to put Curry in that this conversation, but make the case. Tell me why.
You're a little bit preaching in the choir here. Cause I agree with that actually. I think Curry, I only brought it up because most people are talking about it. Like a lot of people lately, especially after him, you know, managing to close out the series against the Rockets and then, you know, handling Portland, you know, he was clearly the dominant player in that series and he beat a good Portland team, but I think I agree with you defensively. They weren't up to snuff for that series.
No, it's actually kind of a nice, I see what you mean now. And it is kind of actually nice that conversation is going on because under normal circumstances, if the team you're about to play in the finals loses their best player, there's going to be a pretty large asterisk on any win that you get. But because Curry has had this run now and because people have just like kind of been eager and giddy to just forget about Durant and push him aside, I don't think they'll be.
I don't think so either. I don't think so either. And I think actually, based on everything that I've heard, it's interesting. Like to me, it's almost like every Warriors title with Kevin Durant has an asterisk to it because it's like people talk about it as if it's just totally unfair, and which I agree with. It is totally unfair, the situation. Not that I don't believe that the Raps could even win that series because I am on cloud nine right now, but but even the rational side of me thinks we would have a chance. But like you said, with KD out, the playing field feels more leveled now. And so even with KD out, people still think this Golden State Warriors team is great. And so that's why Steph is in that conversation. And I think if Steph wins this series without KD, he does vault himself into that conversation and maybe could claim that he has the current throne. I guess we were talking about thrones.
I'm open to it if he dominates the series and wins it comfortably against, because I mean, if for him to overcome, if KD doesn't come back and he has that kind of performance, that would mean he's had to do it against Kawhi Leonard defending him probably at certain points in the series, even if it's just off of a switch. That would be pretty validating for the Steph.
Steph has, you know, he got back-to-back MVPs, of course, but he's gone actually a lot of flack for his playoff performance, you know, despite the three titles. You know, the first title, like Iguodala got finals MVP, not Curry. And then obviously the two other titles were with Kevin Durant. And people, finals that they lost against LeBron, people often blame Curry for a bit kind of choking away that series a little bit. So he's gotten a lot of flack, and I think he has actually a lot of motivation to come out and dominate the series. So I am a bit scared of that, honestly. I think Curry has every bit of motivation necessary to come out and really put his mark on this series and really vault himself into the elite, transcendent, generational superstar level, like in the conversation with the LeBrons and the Kevin Durants.
Okay, I hear you on all that. I want to table that for a minute because I do really badly want to talk about like Warriors narratives and ways to think about this series, not only from a Raptors perspective, but also from a Warriors perspective, and then, you know, kind of a league overview. But before that, let's get back to Kawhi.
Yeah, yeah. This is a Raptors podcast.
He's definitely, let's talk about him. Yeah. Yeah, what the hell? Which entirely too much about Steph Curry right now for my case. This is why we started a Raptors podcast. We were hearing too much about the LeBron Lakers, which unfortunately continues. But anyway, back to Kawhi. He is definitely cemented in that conversation right now for best player in the league. Yes,
100%. 100%. I mean, think about it. Like, he not only is putting up just insane offensive performance, you know, people, I don't know the stats offhand, but, you know, he has a PER that vaults him into elite territory, you know, his scoring. You just watch the games and he's elite. He leaves his imprint on every part of the game, right? Like, you know, rebounds. He had 17 rebounds in game 6. You know, he's been, his passes have been improved significantly. You know, the career high in assists in game 5. He obviously defended Giannis, the MVP of this season, Giannis Antetokounmpo. He defended and clamped him down. Just every facet of the game, he's dominated throughout these playoffs. And I think, so all that previous conversation was for me to say that I think Kawhi Leonard, I agree, is the best player in the league. Kevin Durant being out has left the door open. And I think even if you include Kevin Durant's performance this playoffs, I think Kawhi has outplayed him.
Yeah, I think Kawhi's probably edged him out, if only because he is having to do more than Kevin Durant, frankly.
Absolutely.
To win. Kevin Durant is on a very stacked team. And as much as I don't think that takes away anything from Durant's greatness, I think if you're asking me point blank, which of these two players that statistically are one and the same. I mean, they there's very little separating what they do. Kawhi's had to do it, you know, that much more and under pressure for a team that has struggled at times a little bit in this playoff run. So, yeah, I don't think there's any doubt that Kawhi's the guy right now. And you know, like you said, just if LeBron has to eventually prove that he's still got a claim on that, Kawhi has to finish his case, right, in the finals now. He needs to have a big finals. He needs to make this a long, tough series.
So what do you think of, you know, this Kawhi team coming up against this Warriors team, you know, and how it compares to the past LeBron teams that have faced the Warriors? And, you know, do you think that Kawhi needs to be our LeBron, or do we have, more of a supporting cast that can, you know, help maybe support the superstar a bit more than those Cavs teams? What do you think of that?
Yeah, so maybe I'm mixing a couple categories here, but I think what I'm interested in is assessing kind of the Raptors team quality, like just how good this team is. And one way to kind of rein that in a little bit is to think about the most recent championship teams and even dynasties in the Miami Heat with LeBron James, Dwayne Wade, and Chris Bosh. But then now, and more relevant, and I think what we should focus on more is this incredible Warriors run that's been now in this fifth year, where you have really this incredible run of success. And I think strangely enough, paradoxically enough, like the narrative around them of being just like totally dominant and unfair, especially since Durant has come, that ironically, there's this actual like kind of covering up effect that happens where you forget about how many tough series they've been in, because it's just this narrative has been pushed that they're unbeatable and they're inevitable. And in reality, as far as I can tell, they almost lost last year to the Warriors.
They almost lost to the Rockets,
not the Warriors. And then the year before that, Kawhi had that big lead in the conference finals against them before going down with injury. And it's just impossible. I mean, that's that small sample size, right? Like you're talking about 3 quarters in game 1, but it's impossible to think about that series without that. And then before that, in 2016, they lost, right?
They
there were two series there that mattered, two opponents that mattered that year. They obviously lost, blew a 3-1 lead to Cleveland Cavaliers, as everyone knows. And LeBron finally has this incredible moment with Cleveland.
Yep.
But the series right before that, they were in a 3-1 hole themselves and barely came back.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know if you heard that Ben Simmons. There's so many Simmonses and Bill Simmons and Ben Simmons. That Bill Simmons podcast where they did like the they went back and watched a game from that series.
Oh, yeah.
I think it was
the
game
Klay
5
Thompson
or 6.
Game. Yep.
The Klay Thompson game. Okay. Whatever one that one was.
Yeah.
And they watched that. And I think they kind of came away feeling like OKC choked, right?
Yeah.
Like the only reason that that dynasty really took off was because of that choke. Because otherwise, they just would have been a 1 year and one and done, and they never would have added Kevin Durant. So
yeah, and Clay had a kind of like an out of body experience and like a, just an insane performance that is unheard right. of, basically. So yeah,
right. Yep. So I think even though we have this larger narrative that stretches back now almost 5 years, I guess 4 years, it goes back to probably them winning 73 games after winning the title, that people started to feel like this team was just invincible. Then they end up losing, but then they go out and get Durant, probably the second best player at that point. When Kevin Durant signs with the Warriors, he's probably the second best player in the league, right, behind LeBron? Yeah. So that's huge, right?
Yeah.
it would be a little bit like, I'm trying to think. If the Heat had lost they did lose. When they lost to the Spurs
right.
in 2014, I think that was the last year, right, before LeBron went back to Cleveland?
Yeah.
If they had, instead of him going back to Cleveland, they had signed Kevin Durant.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
I mean, so it was like an incredible break for that team to have the cap pitcher be what it was and just to have the opportunity to add a guy like that. But even after that, in 2017 and in 2018, they've had some tough series.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I agree. Yeah. They're not as invincible as the media currently makes it sound. I think definitely our vision is colored a little bit from that Portland sweep. But right, I agree. Right. And on top of that, this current Kevin Durant-less Warriors team is less deep than any of the prior Warriors teams that won championships without Kevin Durant or won 73 games. Those teams were deep. They had a deep bench full of talent. And now they're a bit thin, you know. It's really, you know, they're three stars plus Andre. Then beyond that, there isn't much, you know. So I think there's a window.
They've been getting some good play from a couple of those guys, but it's definitely thinner than it's normally been. And anybody who says that this team, and I initially had wanted to do kind of a breakdown about this matchup versus the Warriors without Kevin Durant versus this matchup against the Warriors with Kevin Durant, just as a way to kind of interrogate some of these claims. But anybody that's saying the Warriors are more dangerous without Kevin Durant is, not somebody I'm probably taking too serious in terms of how they're analyzing and thinking about this playoff matchup.
Right.
Because there's just the ripple effect of having KD out. You see the bench gets a lot thinner. The starting lineup suddenly has a couple holes in it in terms of having more than one non-shooter. They lose an elite defender. I mean, about how the Raptors would fare. Think about how the Raptors would fare if you take Kawhi off the team.
Yeah, of course.
Right?
I mean, it's ridiculous.
An elite player at both ends that let somebody else come off the bench. Like, I mean, that's what they're losing in Kevin Durant. So I think the door has a crack in it. Not the door has a crack in it. One day we have to do a roundup of just us messing up idioms and like mixing our metaphors.
Yeah, we're bad at that.
The door does not have a crack in it. The door is cracked open just a little bit. And there is definitely an opportunity for a Kawhi Leonard shoulder to just lean in and throw that thing open. Now that is how you do a metaphor. I was when we talked about how we were going to do this episode, whether we would just sort of go all in with the most Raptor fan takes possible and just be reckless, as you said. Or should we just, you know, just break it down and try to, you know, be calm and cool and collected? I think your instinct is correct. I think we can let Kyle and Kawhi and Nick Nurse be calm, cool, and collected. And we should be reckless. But the reason that I hesitated a little bit is that if Kevin Durant comes back, if he suits up as early as game two, which I really doubt is going to happen, and I think I've heard a lot that he may just not come back at all, and they just don't want to reveal that because obviously that makes it easier it makes Nick Nurse's job a lot easier for game prep. But if he comes back, if he plays as early as game two or three or four, to me, he's our team's like worst nightmare, because then the opponent has a guy who can kind of dominate the game in a similar way as Kawhi and kind of battle Kawhi to like even.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I'm not all the way there, though. I think that the Raps, this Raps team has a chance still. Even if Kevin Durant comes back, let's say mid-series, I think, you know, there's all sorts of kind of intangible factors at play. Like, I'm definitely not one to say that the Warriors will be worse without Kevin Durant. I think that's ridiculous. But I think there will be, let's say, an adaptation period maybe. And I think that, you know, Kawhi, that Kawhi Spurs team was on the verge of crushing Golden State with Kevin Durant. And I think, you know, if our team comes together, you know, honestly, what I think might happen is if Kevin Durant comes mid-series, everyone will doubt the Raps' chances of winning. And I think our players actually kind of rise to that occasion. Like, it's kind of like what you were talking about earlier, where during the Sixers series, the expectation was that we were supposed to win that series. And that kind of shook us a little bit, I think. And when it came to the Bucks series, you know, I think we showed a level of maturity partially because it felt like almost the pressure was off. And I think now the pressure, I feel like, is mostly off. And especially if Kevin Durant comes in, I mean, they'll have every excuse to lose this series. And I think that'll leave the door open to use your analogy.
Okay, we got to stay safe with that.
You know what? We're talking too much about the Warriors. Again, we've fallen back into this trap. I want to come back to this Raps team and just talk about each and every one of our guys and how they stepped up and how impressed I am with everyone. I kind of want to bring up, I want to start with our bench, first of all. So I want to talk about first Fred VanVleet and just how insane his turnaround was.
Oh my God.
And it just, how happy I am for him. A guy that has just been getting all the shit, all of it. He's been getting all the shit from the media. Everyone was just dumping on him. You know, we alluded to this, I think, in a previous episode, but some people were like claiming that he doesn't belong in the NBA. And like, clearly people hadn't been watching Fred. And just, again, the lazy takes. But Freddie came through, and he is, to me, he is as much of a reason that we managed to close out that series as anybody on the team. Just his calm, cool, collected ability to hit those shots.
You know, it's early days in the life of the Raptors Room podcast, but I feel pretty good about the way we have commented on Fred VanVleet through our run here so far in this playoffs. We definitely acknowledged that he was really being played off the court in that Philly series, but we stressed that that was a tough matchup and a shooting slump. It was not a reason to think that Fred wasn't still a huge part of this team moving forward. And, you know, a guy can have things to work on. A guy can have room for improvement, especially a young guy like that coming off the bench. That doesn't mean he isn't going to be a factor at some point and that he isn't still a really good player. I was upset at myself when I listened to one of our episodes and you mentioned the flack he was taking on the Raptors subreddit.
Oh, which, yeah. Yeah.
You're that deep now. You're that obsessed.
Oh yeah, for sure. The Raptors subreddit is just full of gold, and I encourage anyone who's listening to frequent it. It is great.
Okay, shout out to the subreddit. Yeah. But they were, and I imagine that's pretty serious fans. Pretty.
I wouldn't say it's everyone.
Oh, okay.
It's not obviously it's not the entire subreddit, but there were a particular subset of Raptors fans on that subreddit that I was very disappointed in, who were just like calling for Freddie's head, claiming he should be benched in favor of Jeremy Lin, which would just have been a disaster. Honestly, credit to Nick Nurse as well, another guy who deserves all the praise. I think he outcoached Mike Budenholzer, but probably the coach of the year. He outcoached him in that series. And I think his confidence in his players and understanding the matchups and understanding who to ride and who to understand when, you know, player XYZ is having a cold night, whether it's Danny Green or in the last year's Fred VanVleet. You know, Nick Nurse recognizes when to play his guys, when to maybe sit them for a game. But even, you know, I feel like players trust Nick, and even, you know, you can see it that even when he might bench a player because he's having an off game, that player will come back, you know, not feeling dispirited, but feeling rejuvenated even and empowered. Yep. You saw that with Serge, I think, with Norm, you saw it with Freddie, and I'm sure we're going to see it with Danny in the finals.
I think so too. I predicted in the Milwaukee series, and I think our episode after game three, that we were due for a big Danny Green game, and that would be one of the reasons that the Raptors would come back and win that Bucks series. We didn't end up getting the Danny Green game. We got a Norm game and a couple of Fred games.
Yeah, it's coming.
I, Yeah, I still think it's coming. And that's another encouraging thing, which is, you know, Danny Green is a perfect example of kind of the touch that Nick Nurse has had in this playoffs, where Nick approaches the roster, I think, with like a lot of patience and a lot of understanding and thinking about each player's role and their ego even and their sort of emotional makeup in a big picture way. And he keeps all those things in mind when he makes his decisions. But
yep.
The difference between what he's doing and what Bud did, I think, no matter how much patience you want to have, at some point you got to make the right call to win. And it seemed like Bud was just way too stubborn and just almost like making a big change in the middle of a series or in the middle of a game would have been some kind of like indictment on how they play.
Right.
And if that's true, if a change like that screwed them up more, then I think that is an indictment on your coaching, that like you haven't brought them along, you haven't led them well enough to like build out that mentality that you understand when changes need to be made because of a matchup or because of a slump or whatever. I mean, you don't have 82 games to let the kind of like regress to the mean. You know, you have to make the change sometimes. And Nick Nurse is showing he doesn't do that too quickly. I mean, he respects his players a ton and he doesn't rush to do that. But he has done it now in back-to-back series, made a big change.
Yeah, actually, Budenholzer kind of reminded me of the frustrations that we as Raps fans felt during the Casey years. I think that was our actually biggest frustration. As great as Coach Casey was, he was very unflexible when it came to his rotations and adjustments. And, you know, time and again, we would be burned by that in the playoffs. And I think we saw the key difference with Nick Nurse this year. All year long, all he was doing was experimenting. He would change up lineups constantly, try different configurations. And you compare that with Mike Budenholzer, who kept the same formula all year. It worked great during the regular season, like the Raptors teams in past years, where our formula worked great in the regular season. But when it came time in the playoffs, when push came to shove and you were faced with a decision, you know, Nick Nurse had the ability to make the right adjustments, whereas Mike Budenholzer was left uncertain.
I think it's interesting, but like Coach Bud gets a lot of credit for having kind of a modern offense. He from what I understood, they like switched against Boston. They had on defense, they switched for like the first time all year, and that was kind of treated like, oh, he made like this great adjustment. But I'm sorry, but. Getting your guys to play a switching defense in the playoffs in 2019, like that's page one. Yeah, that's exactly, like the beginner stuff. That's not a real impressive adjustment. Now, maybe that was the adjustment they had to make and it worked, whatever. I don't know. But I just mean that's not like anything to write home about. Anybody would do that. And you have to have your team prepared to play like that. Like, I don't understand what he thought was going to happen if they did beat the Raptors and they played like Steph Curry and Draymond. Like, how are you not going to switch?
Yeah.
Like, I don't understand what the plan was, but anyway.
Yeah.
So that's that only adds to the excitement here, because for the first time ever, not only do we have the best player in a series, in a major series, in a conference final, and now potentially in an NBA finals, not only do we have the best player, we also have a coach that maybe he's not the best coach, and Steve Kerr obviously is going to have something to say about it, but a coach you trust, a coach you believe
in. Exactly. And to kind of talk a bit more about the Bucks series and what I took away from that in terms of confidence level that I have going to the finals, my confidence is very high. And part of the reason is just how stunned I am about the championship level defense that we've been playing. And, you know, the mantra that, you know, the old mantra that everyone says, defense wins championships. And if that's true, we have a defense that wins a championship, because our defense pretty much all playoffs long has been stunning. And you know, minus a few hiccups here and there, like the way we just closed the door on Giannis like no other team had. We did what all the Boston believers believe the Celtics were going to do against the Bucks. We executed that flawlessly. Yep. We built the wall. We made the perfect rotations. Our defense was all on a string. It was just beautiful to watch. Honestly, I enjoyed watching our defense maybe even a bit more than our offense during that series, because I was just amazed by how well we just shut the door on that team.
Yep. Yeah, I think that's something that's been understated by the national media. I think most of the people who are plugged in specifically to the Raptors have been talking about the Raptors defense nonstop. But I think there's been like a real understatement from the national media or the international media. Sorry. I'm down here in the States listening to ESPN and and TNT and the big American podcasters. But I think there's been a real underappreciation, an understatement about the level of defense that the Raptors have played. Like, this is by far the best defense. At least if they play at this level, the level they've been playing through three rounds, this is by far the best defense that Golden State will face in the playoffs.
Yeah, exactly. And I think, we gave Bill Simmons credit earlier, but we also give flack when it's due as well. And I just wanted to bring up that I think it was the most recent Bill Simmons, Ryan Russillo podcast. And he's mentioned this in their previous podcast too. But, both of them, mostly Bill, is just talking about he expresses his confusion over what happened to the Bucks offense.
Yes.
I'm paraphrasing, but he said something to the effect of, this Bucks offense worked all year, but in this series, it was a train wreck. Why is that? And, he started talking about, the Bucks don't have a closer, et cetera, et cetera. And not mentioning the fact that they were stonewalled by an elite defense, a championship level defense. I think, you're right. That goes unacknowledged a lot of the time. And we definitely acknowledge it. And I think that's one of the biggest things that gives me confidence going to these finals.
Yeah, they're to just give a counterexample of some really good national media guys that have been all over the Raptors defense throughout this playoffs. Guys like Kevin Arnovitz, Zach Lowe, they have been talking about, when they look at these matchups that the Raptors have had, they just kind of shake their head a little bit at the Raptors defense. It's like the one thing that, if it's real, and I think maybe that's what's held them back a little bit. They're just not sure if this team has made that big of a leap defensively from their regular season performance. But it's not crazy to think that this is real, because Kawhi was going at 75% in the 60 games that he played. Like, Kyle Lowry missed a lot of games. Siakam was really focused on running the offense for the first time, and or having the offense run through him, carrying the ball up the court, being a facilitator on fast breaks and all this stuff. Like, there was just so many moving parts. They had multiple trades. Well, they multiple moving bodies in a big trade at the trade deadline. It's been a big challenge to hold this team together through the 82 games. And it's just, at some point they flipped the switch and dug in, and the defense, like you said, I think game one against Orlando, it wasn't there. Game three against Philly, and game two against the Bucks.
Yeah.
That's it. Three games out of their last, how many they played now? Six, seven, five. So they've played 11.
Number of games they played. Let me see. Five, seven.
Oh my God. This is the 18, part of the 18, podcast 18. Where we,
this is the content that people want us, adding three numbers together.
No, I was about to get the amount, but I just realized that I didn't have enough fingers, So I had to I was looking for my phone. My phone's plugged in. I don't have a calculator. No. Yeah. So it's been pretty amazing through 18, you said 18, right? Through 18 games,
even that game one, I think our defense was actually pretty good in game one against Orlando. It was a low scoring game. You're right. It wasn't elite. That's
they
for
scored
sure.
over 100 points, and I don't think Orlando should be scoring over 100 points.
Right. That's a good point. But beyond that, and I think actually our defense and our communication and cohesion within the team has actually grown as these playoffs have gone on, as we've gotten more reps. Like you said, our regular season was very scattered because of the availability of our players, and obviously we got Mark midway. And so I think it's definitely come together, and I think the players have said as much in their interviews.
There was a lot of talk about Philly kind of being put together on the fly and not really having that starting five play together a lot going into the playoffs. I think that was valid, and I think Philly, depending on how their offseason goes, is definitely a dangerous team moving forward. But it's true about the Raptors too, and so these guys that are kind of coming late to what's going on in Toronto and just shocked that they beat Milwaukee four straight. That's what they're missing. They just don't know how this season has kind of unfolded and how little, that everyone talks about Golden State, kind of just not really giving it their best in the regular season. Why would you? They got to pace themselves. They count on being there in June. So they're not, and LeBron too, these past few years with Cleveland, it's like really good players and teams will pace themselves. They are waiting for the playoffs, and for the first time ever in Raptors history, we did the same thing.
Exactly.
We were that sure of ourselves, and Nick Nurse was that sure of what he had, and on top of that you add a guy like Marc Gasol late in the year. So we were a work in progress, but not in the sense that like Boston was, where you weren't sure if it would ever come together. We were a work in progress in the sense that we were prioritizing learning and developing different strategies and different looks, and much less concerned with like always getting a win or always going 100%. So,
yeah, Kawhi said as much in one of his interviews during the regular season. He said something like, "These 82 games are just practice for me. They're just practice. Like these games mean nothing to me. It's all about the playoffs." And obviously, the team strategy with their load management strategy was directly because of that. And so. Yeah,
we were just chilling. I mean, I feel like after the first 10, 15 games of the regular season, it was like, okay, we're definitely going to be one of the best teams in the league this year, and we should just try to prepare, whatever that looks like.
And that goes back to the culture that we were talking about of our team. You know, like other teams would not be able to take it as easy in the regular season because they haven't developed that reputation and culture yet. And I think you saw that as much with this young Bucks team that we just beat. So,
yep. And I want to, I think... What are we at? We're at 50 plus minutes here. I want to kind of keep moving and maybe not go forever, because I think what our goal to do in this round is to have a bunch of episodes and really stay on top of this series. But before we go, I want to think a little bit about predicting the series. Not necessarily putting a number on it, although I think both you and I are comfortable doing that. But predicting a little bit about how this is going to play out, because I think there are two things that I'm thinking about. One is in direct response to what you just said, which is that Toronto did kind of blink or like have a moment of fear in the round against Philly. And I think that happened because they were right at the goal that they had set out for. They were right at that. We have to get to the conference finals to make this a success. And Philly was giving them everything they could handle. And everybody was sort of hesitating and failing to knock down shots that they normally knock down. That was like the crisis point. And once we overcame that, thanks to Kawhi, we were in the clear. And you saw that calm, steady approach against Milwaukee. I think you'll see that again in the finals.
Yeah.
But the flip side of that is you got a Warriors team that's coming in thinking they're on a high. I mean, they're super confident, right? It's like they're without KD for the first time in what year was that? 2016.
Right.
And they knocked off their kind of biggest rival in the West without KD in Houston. And then they just swept in the conference finals. Despite the fact that those games were often close on the scoreboard, I will say that it felt like Golden State was kind of toying with Portland a little bit. they didn't seem to really be concerned about Portland.
A bit a la LeBron with the Raps in previous years.
Absolutely. And so, but I think the flip side of that is that people are really, really overestimating the quality of their opponent in the Western Conference at the same time. And I think also we may be over interpreting what Curry's doing, because Curry... This is a take. This is a bit takey, so feel free to disagree or push
back.
Give it to me.
Let's do it.
Well, I think Curry struggles. We talked about him struggling a little bit in the playoffs as opposed to maybe in the regular season. And I think that has been magnified by Kevin Durant coming, because when you have now a roster, when you put that death lineup out there with Iggy, Durant, Draymond, Clay, and Steph, there's one hole on defense, right?
Yep.
That's Steph.
Yep.
So if you're up against a good opponent, like Houston or Cleveland, you know, with some smart players and some good coaching, they're going to attack you relentlessly. And then on the other end of the floor, when you have the ball and Curry's got the ball in his hand to start the possession, he knows not only is he being picked on at the defensive end, there's a guy on his team who's better than me who I should give the ball to, and that our coach is calling for me to give the ball to. So I think that really gets into his head and makes him struggle. I mean, because if you can't get into the game offensively because you're giving it up to KD and you're getting attacked, like that's just a bit of a crisis of confidence. So this is a long way of saying that I think Curry has his confidence back, but I'm not sure it's as well placed as he and many people think it is.
Yeah, I think that is actually a really interesting point. And I think it's been a topic of discussion a lot about how the Warriors are something like 31-1 when Steph plays and Kevin Durant doesn't. And, you know, people obviously have been like, you know, why is that? Obviously, they're not worse without Kevin Durant. So how could that be? And I think your point about Steph becoming a different player with Kevin Durant is valid, and it passes the eye test. I think. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't have the stats in front of me, obviously, and maybe the stats tell a different story, but I agree 100%. Steph, you know, gets hunted on the defensive end, And on the offensive end, if he's giving up a bunch of possessions to KD, he might get out of rhythm. You know, he feels maybe less important, and it definitely, you know, eats at you a little bit. You know, a two-time MVP, it must be hard for a two-time MVP to give up the spotlight on both ends of the floor. And like, that's not to knock Steph at all. I think Steph is like super professional, you know, best, one of the best teammates, I'm sure it seems that way. But I think you have a good point. And I think, you know, we keep saying it, the door's open. It's open.
Yeah, it is open. And I want to also say, okay, so it sounds like I'm kind of contradicting myself, because I'm saying Steph's playing better or seems to be playing better because he is not with Durant. And it's kind of a psychological interpretation. It's just like, in playoff basketball, the worst defender on the court is going to get attacked. With Kevin Durant out there, that's going to be Steph. And then you don't get to come up the floor and like launch a three and do all these. I mean, you can do that in the regular season, but when it comes to crunch time and where every possession matters in the playoffs, you're going to have to keep giving that ball to KD. And I think it's just demoralizing and it takes you out of the game. You can't get into the rhythm. But so it sounds like I'm contradicting myself, because on the other hand, they just rattled off 6 wins and I'm saying that they're less of a threat to the Raps. And I think that's where I wanted to just kind of end on this note, maybe before we make a prediction. I think that they are overestimating, the commentators and people kind of observing this and making predictions, they're overestimating how good Portland was. I don't think it's that Curry did some crazy historic series. I think Portland just can't defend Steph Curry at all. So he just ate them alive and it was barely enough. And then I think this goes back to the take that I put out there about the Houston series. And Andrew, you kind of laughed at me and you made a bit of hay out of it. But Zach Lowe, I'll have you know, the Zach Lowe, he cribbed directly from me in his preview for this playoff series.
I hope he gave you credit for that.
He didn't. Call him out. He didn't, but I'm sure that was just an oversight, maybe an editorial error. But he said, and I quote, "Houston looked overwhelmed by the opportunity they had when Durant went down." Yeah. It was Houston that blinked, and that injury got in their head. We don't need to revisit the take, but so I'm just saying that you have 6 games now, right, where Curry's been on his own, and that has made everyone think that Curry is even better than Durant, and this Golden State Warriors team may be even better without Durant. I think it's understandable that Curry gets activated a little bit more, gets more into the game without Durant, but I just don't think that these recent wins are particularly, I don't think they make a big statement. Think if he had beaten Houston from game one by himself, from one all the way through, that would have said something more to me. But at the end of the day, they went out and got Durant. We know this. They went and got Durant because that team without him was beatable. They lost the title. And so they're beatable again. So what's going to happen? What's going to happen? Well, Raptors, Golden State.
All I know is that we are not going to blink like the Rockets did. This team has shown that we have a level-headedness about us. We have a championship mentality. And to an extent, we're playing with house money a little bit. So the pressure is not as great as definitely what the Rockets suddenly felt when KD went out. And I also think that our defense is head and shoulders better than the Portland defense. And we are definitely not going to give up as easily these third quarter explosions that we saw against Portland. So all in all, I think we are the best team. We are the best team to challenge Golden State, I should say, compared to everyone else in the league. Everyone else in the league can drop dead. I don't want to hear any of your takes about XYZ team can
parody.
Yeah, parody. But I don't want to hear about, you know, these other teams would pose a bigger challenge to Golden State. We are the biggest challenge to Golden State. And I think we have the best player in the series, especially if Kevin Durant is out. But I even think if Kevin Durant is in, we have the best player. And I am going to say Raptors in 6. Wow. That is my call. Raptors in 6. I don't want to hear Golden State in 6 takes. We've shown that we can win games on the road. We've done it. And I think Golden State is going to blink. They're going to blink. Steph Curry is going to get in his own head. The moment is going to get too great for him. He's going to think to himself, this is my moment to prove that I'm real. And he's going to launch a hilarious three-pointer that's just going to brick. And then Kawhi's going to come down and shoot it in his eye to win it. I'm calling it.
I love it. I love it. I love the confidence. I love the courage. You went with 6. That's very courageous. I'm going to, in my role as the more hesitant, more concerned Raptors fan, I'm going to go Raptors in seven. I think they're going to win it at home. I honestly could see this being a series where every game, every home team wins the game throughout. But I'm going to take Raptors in seven. I'm convinced, and I want to even ask you to finish this off. Is this the best team that the Golden State Warriors have faced in their dynasty years?
I say yes.
I didn't miss a beat. Better than the team they lost to in Cleveland with Kyrie?
I think we're better. I'm just going to say it. I think we're better. I think that Cleveland team, although they were definitely historic when it came to their offense, I think their defense left a lot to be desired. And like I said, and like everyone says, defense wins you championships, and we have a championship-level defense.
I like it. We got the best player. Best player. That usually wins it, right? That usually wins
it. Kawhi Leonard.
Case closed. Oh, okay. Well, that's the last thing. What if Kevin Durant comes back?
If Kevin Durant comes back, so what are you asking? Like, what game does Kevin Durant come back in?
Let's say he plays game three.
If he comes back in game three, I'm going to say that because I think the rational part of me thinks that like we'll probably split the two first games. That seems like a likely outcome to me. And then Kevin Durant coming back, I want to say Raps in seven. Honestly, Raps in seven. Yeah, that's the one I'm going with. Raps in seven.
There was something in your voice, or maybe just that little hitch in how you delivered that, that makes me wonder if you're not having the same nightmare scenario in your head as that I have. If Kevin Durant comes back and just ends up edging Kawhi as the best best player in the series.
It's
edging,
like you said,
edging Kawhi sounds inappropriate.
Yeah.
Okay, we're done. We're done. We'll cut that. We'll cut that.
No, that's staying.
I think that's my biggest nightmare. But I said Raptors in seven. I'll just stick with it regardless. I don't know if KD's coming back.
I don't think he is. I think everything to me has indicated that he's not. Everything that I've been hearing, and I hope he doesn't. Honestly, yeah. I'm being 100% honest. I hope he doesn't.
Yeah. Makes a huge difference in this series because
makes a huge difference.
We actually are the rare team in this league that has the kind of defensive makeup to deal with Clay, Draymond, and Steph. It's a whole other thing with Durant.
Yeah.
But okay, Raps are winning. Raps are winning the title.
Raps are winning the title. We're excited. We're gonna fly David down for the championship parade. It's gonna be great.
I was just gonna say, yeah. We'll get the GoFundMe going right now so I can get out of Jacksonville to Toronto for the parade.
Yeah, folks, please Venmo us your donations. We need to get David out here, obviously, because we need the live coverage. You know what I mean? Like the folks need the content. They need us live on location for the parade. So, you know, help us out. Send David to the parade, and we'll give you the content that you deserve and that you need.
Well, I'm going to have fun down here. I might even have to, if things really get going our way, I might have to like collaborate with some local bar down here and make it the Canadian expat bar to watch the Raptors. This is very exciting. I've never been here before in my sports fan career.
I'm so excited too. This is like such a great feeling. I feel like, yeah, it's like I said, all those years of growing up as a Raps fan, following them through the ups and downs, and to be here, it feels amazing. And this is why we watch sports, for these moments. So go Raptors.